We've got a lot of ground to cover on this rainy day, beginning with this latest jobs number, which came out last week. How the state of Connecticut lost 1,600 jobs in February. But we were told by the Department of Labor that a lot of this was weather related, and that's why we had the job losses. But next door, the state of Rhode Island gained 2,600 jobs. So did it not snow in Rhode Island? Did they not have weather issues in next door Rhode Island? We're going to get the lowdown, find out what's happening from the Senate Republican President, Leonard Fasano. Senator, welcome to CT on the Hill.
Good morning, Dan. How are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, what are we to make of this jobs report when we hear weather-related and next door, Rhode Island is showing job growth?
You know, that's the reason why, sort of tongue-in-cheek, when that came out and the commissioner for the governor said it's weather-related, the only response you can give is, come on, man. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And if anybody watching the ESPN shows, no, they show these clips that are ridiculous clips, and you can't describe the event. You just say, come on, man. And that's all this deserves. Because when you refuse to look at the facts, and you refuse to look at the numbers and digest them for what they are, and you put a lame excuse, like after Connecticut and Rhode Island, it's 80 degrees and sunny and there's no snow, it's just absurd. It's absurd, and it's embarrassing, and it should be scary all at the same time, because that's the only real-time data that you have to demonstrate whether the economy is good or bad. And for all these years, all we heard were excuses. The stock market, it's the fact that the weather, it is the traffic. I mean, it's just a number of excuses when the truth of the matter is it's incompetence in terms of putting together a future for the state of Connecticut.
And then, Senator, we see the story on the front page of the Current today that UTC is announcing it will spend $300 million and hire 250 software engineers to create a research and development center, but it's not going to be in Connecticut. It's going to be in Brooklyn, New York.
Right. Think about that. Brooklyn, New York. I mean, I like Brooklyn. Don't get me wrong. Brooklyn's a nice place. But, you know, we just gave them a whole hunk of money in Connecticut. And I would gather that it has a lot to do, although, you know, the problem is these companies never really admit what the real issue is because they don't want to get the powers that be upset. But there has to be an economic decision that was made there that took Connecticut out of the equation. Now, whether it's because in the past the Democrats have looked at budgets that have curtailed certain deductions and write-offs, and they look at that and say, you know what, that probably will make it in Connecticut in the long range. We can't afford that risk. And frankly, that is what is happening. I've talked to companies who said, it's not even so much what we pass. It's what ideas are brought forth that get out of committee. That we know this year, maybe it got out of committee this year and died, but next year maybe it's got a little more legs. And that's what scares these businesses. And people just don't get that in the Capitol. And they have to understand, especially on the Democratic side, that these ideas scare people who say, look, you know what? They were going to cut back our losses. You could only take so much per year, and they were going to reduce the amount that you could take. We can't afford research and development losses not being able to have those as credits against our taxes. So we're out. That's what's scary.
You know, Senator, all anybody needed to do was look at the front page of the Hartford Current on Saturday. The three lead stories involved urban areas in Connecticut losing population, the tuition rates are going up, and the unions were protesting any move to bring about union concessions on the bills that were being proposed at the hearing on Friday.
Yeah, you know, so they put 96 Republican bills dealing with structural changes to government that they never plan on voting in favor of. So they put them all on for one purpose, so they could have a press conference. Isn't that embarrassing? That should get every taxpayer, Republican or Democrat, just upset to say, so you put these on not because you thought they were worthwhile, but you put these on so you could, in your self-interest, have a press conference to talk about how bad they are. That is just embarrassing.
Well,
embarrassing.
But in the meantime, the state continues to struggle. The systemic changes that are required to bring the budget into balance don't seem to be even discussed. How do we turn this thing around?
Well, I think we do have to have a conversation of, I think the first conversation has to be, one, we got to look at, if they really want to have a conversation about state union employee benefits, we need to sit down and say, do you think that state union employees benefits with 75% of state employees paying 2% towards their pension, which is a defined benefit, is that the norm and is that fair? That's the first conversation. Forget about who you think you can tax or who should be taxed. Just as a plan, do you think that's fair? Secondly, health care. Do you think that paying $10 for a prescription drug, $15 to see a doctor, $30 for emergency care, no copay, do you think that's fair, no deductible? Do you think that's fair? And if you think that's fair, is that the norm? And can we afford it? And after we go through all those hoops, then we look back and say, was the positions that put forth to say to make some reasonable changes, is that, was that an unfair position? But their argument is, I don't want to have that discussion. I want to talk about taxing, quote-unquote, wealthy people. And the commissioner of DRS, who was a former Democratic president of the Senate, former lieutenant governor, Democrat for the state of Connecticut, big wig in his party at the time, said there's an out-migration of taxpayers in the state of Connecticut. Now, he gets to look at the figures. He gets to look at tax returns more than anybody else can. And he said there's this out-migration. And when those people are leaving, the rich, then we've got problems in the state that we need to adjust. Because if they leave, someone's got to pick up that bill. And it may be the middle-income payers who've got to pick up that bill, and that's unfair.
Well, as you know, the idea of raising the sales tax is now being floated on the Hill, right?
Yeah, I think predominantly they're looking to raise the sales tax as a, from what I hear, a municipal relief. Once again, they cut the towns because they're broke, and they're saying, well, we don't want to tax them, so you go ahead and tax them. And you know, that's just going to pit this town against that town, because if my town taxes and your town doesn't tax, I'm going to go to your businesses and say, hey, you know, we don't have the sales tax in our town. Why don't you move to our town and you tell your customers, don't shop in that town, but they're going to have a tax. Shop in my town, it doesn't have a tax. I mean, that just starts, we talk about the wars that we're having, the tax wars we're having with New York, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. Now it's going to be North Haven, Wallingford, East Haven, Durham, Cheshire, West Haven. It is once again the lazy thinking that comes out of that building. It's lazy. Anybody can say, yeah, tax solved the problem, like the minimum wage. That's lazy thinking. We got to spur this economy. And the faster paced this economy is, the more that this economy grows, there's more money for people, there's more competition in wages. We're going the complete other end of the spectrum. And I think we saw some of that outcry in the last election. So as long as they want to stick to the same game plan, the Democrats do, that have placed the state in trouble, I guess I can't stop them, but the voters can.
Now, as you know, the governor challenged the Republicans, asking them, where is their budget? So, do the Republicans have a budget?
So let's talk about that. I think I'm 50% of the Senate the last time I counted. We were 18. Looney was 18. How come the governor didn't ask President Looney for his budget? Why are you asking me for mine? I thought this was a collaborative process where we're 50% of appropriations and there's going to be conversations. If you're asking for me for my budget, then you're suggesting that appropriations is not going to come out with a budget that Republicans and Democrats can rally behind. I know this is a whole new idea to this building, that the Senate is 50%. But if you're going to ask for me, then you need to ask Senator Looney, where's his budget?
Have you sat at the table with the Democrats in the Senate in order to work on a budget?
Well, it's a little early for that. Well, what I think we're all doing, I should say, I know what we're all doing, is all of us and all our caucuses are taking the information that appropriation is putting through on their subcommittees as far as what agencies need and what they don't need. We're listening to that information. And I think all of our caucuses, all four caucuses, are probably working on some budget that they're thinking of at some 10,000-foot level, maybe 2,000-foot level. And then I figure probably towards the end of March, first week of April, we'll have some conversations. There has been conversations in the building among the leaders individually, collectively, and so there will be conversations. There is no doubt to that. It's a little bit early in the process because we're still waiting for subcommittees who look at each agencies to report back as, you know, what they need to maintain, where they can cut, what they need more money in, so you get a better idea of how much you need to run government.
Now, on another topic, as you know, in Fairfield, the public school system has been under scrutiny for years by the State Board of Education in regards to whether the public school system is racially balanced. And at a January 4th meeting, when the chairman of the Board of Education, Alan B. Taylor, talked about what needs to be done in order to bring these schools into balance, he made the famous quote, "We don't want to create ghettos in Fairfield," and among community groups, his quote has stirred a lot of negative reaction. You wrote to the chairman of the State Board of Education. He wrote back, and you were not satisfied with his response, and so you wrote him a letter back last week. How about talking about that?
Sure. I think his response was very insensitive. His argument was that based upon the population of that district, that school should be some percentage black-white. And when he looked at the numbers, it turns out that there are more minorities in that school district than the general population, and there was an argument that they need to balance the school. And I get that. The statute says that you have to have that balance, whether it's white population larger than what's there or black pop, doesn't matter, you have to rebalance. I get it. And they worked on it, and they came, and the Fairfield came up with some plan that they've been working on, and they indicated it would take more time, at which point he said, look, you know, we don't want ghettos in our school. Ghetto has a very negative connotation, and you know, I'm not being politically sensitive on this issue, but I just think that is the wrong message for someone who's dealing with the Chef cases, and which people are looking at to uphold the laws of our state and our country. And I think that those words are insensitive. So I gave him the opportunity to say, you know, maybe you misspoke. Maybe you didn't really mean quite that way. Why don't you explain what you meant? And he doubled down on it. At the beginning, he talked about the statute, and he's right. Then, at the end of the letter, he doubled down on saying, well, you know, I didn't mean it that way, but what I meant was, if you have too many minorities, you end up in a, you know, sort of ghetto situation. And it's like, what? What happened there? So, I think that at this point, he needs to apologize to all those in attendance. He needs to apologize read a public apology in the newspaper. I just don't think that that's very offensive to me, that he would use those words. That I don't find them in the statute, and I just think it's very offensive. And I, you know, I just wrote that last week, and you know, he hasn't gotten back to me. But I find that very disheartening. And you know, we need people to respect our officials. We need our officials to respect people's feelings. And this is not being PC. This is just over the norm. I mean, I found it very offensive.
And you've heard from community groups about this, haven't you?
Well, I was at a meeting, and someone brought it to my attention, and I said, well, let me read the article. And I read the article, and I said, you know, let me just ask this guy if this just was a misspeak. Give him the benefit of the doubt. Let him clean up the record. It's a misspeak, and we're done with it. But when he wrote back, it sort of questions his mindset, in my view. It questions, at least in my view, it questions what does he really think about a school district that if the population was minority in this district, and therefore the school reflected accurately that population, does that mean that school is a ghetto?
Yeah.
That's really hard to swallow. If it is a ghetto that you're trying to avoid in Fairfield, given that the black population is higher than the white population, then in an area that is a black population and the school's black, does that mean that school's a ghetto? Is that what you think?
No.
And if you don't, then those are definitely not the words. And that's where I run into a problem with it.
Right. So you want him to make a written apology?
At this point, I think he has to.
Yeah.
Or he's got to move out of the way. Because if you don't have the confidence of the people that you're able to judge these things correctly and fairly without prejudice, and I don't mean that in a racial sense, then you sort of lose the initiative of anything you want to do.
Okay. Well, certainly we covered a lot of ground, Senator. We'll continue to follow the budget situation as well and what's going on in that area. But as always, thanks very much for spending some time with us today, and stay dry on this rainy day.
You too. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.